Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Milzoff, senior editor at Billboard and Broadway fan extraordinaire here. So as many of you who follow the podcast may know, I was especially excited by the revivals that opened on Broadway this past season, one of which was Rodgers and Hammerstein's Carousel. Carousel premiered on Broadway way back in 1945. It became a film in 1956. And its story takes place in the late 1800s. But as a show, it touches on some surprisingly complex issues that continue to feel very modern, something that I think is true of many of the shows that Rodgers and Hammerstein did together, like South Pacific and The King and I. Carousel takes place in a small Maine town, and it revolves around the unlikely romance between a rough and macho carnival barker named Billy Bigelow and the innocent good girl Julie Jordan. They end up getting married, but when Billy becomes unemployed, he hits Julie in his frustration and, spoiler alert, ends up getting stabbed and dies while attempting robbery. The remainder of the show after that is about what happens when Billy, sort of in the afterlife, is given a chance to redeem himself and to let both Julie and their daughter Louise know that he really loved them. As you can see, it is a bit of a strange, complex, somewhat fraught story. But above all, Carousel is really known for having one of the most gorgeous scores in Broadway history. I would say it deserves the iconic label for sure. A couple of the most well-known songs, If I Loved You and You'll Never Walk Alone, have actually made it onto the Billboard charts before throughout the 1960s as covers by the likes of Elvis Presley, Patti LaBelle, and the pop duo Chad and Jeremy. Big ups for Chad and Jeremy. The production on Broadway now, which opened in April and got 11 Tony nominations, is beautifully done through and through, from the choreography by Justin Peck, which won a Tony Award, to the cast, who are definitely among some of the most talented singing actors on Broadway now. Three of them are my guests on the podcast today: Joshua Henry, who plays Billy, Jesse Mueller, who plays Julie, and Renee Fleming, a megastar of the opera world, who plays Nettie Fowler. All three of them were quite deservingly nominated for Tonys this year, and we had a great talk about how this production of Carousel is making a show from the 40s feel totally relevant today.
If I loved you, time and again I would try to say all I'd want you.
I have to start by saying that I feel a very personal connection to each one of you in different ways, which I will tell you, and perhaps you will or won't care. But Josh, I have to tell you, I'm the number one Scottsboro Boys stan in the world. I will never stop telling everyone how wonderful it is.
Thank you.
It should have run longer. So that was my introduction to you, and been seeing you in various shows since then.
I appreciate that.
And Jesse, Waitress is actually the first musical that I wrote about at Billboard.
Wow.
That I feel helped kind of inaugurate more musical theater coverage here. which was a great thing.
Very cool.
And Renee, I've obviously been aware of you for a long time and seen many of your performances at the Met, but I am also an Upper West Sider, and I remember once I saw you on the street, like, changing a tire.
What?
And I was like, she is no diva. She is, like, getting down and dirty. I love this.
Is that you?
She's like, was that my twin?
It was, you seem to be doing something, like, intense with a car. That was like using your hands.
Yeah, no, it's very possible. I until recently had a car, so who knows? I had a bad accident in the city. Who knows? You could get hit and total a BMW on Broadway.
Oh no!
At 79th Street.
Oh,
I thought, yeah, I didn't know cars could go that fast. I pulled into the intersection,
like an
looked right,
course.
And there was this big bright white van coming really fast, and I thought, oh, I wish I could back up. It was fine. I wasn't hurt at all.
I'm amazing. Glad you're okay, and I was impressed at the time.
Yeah.
Whatever it
wasn't
was
that. You would remember that. No, I don't know what it was. Anyway, neat.
Well, I was looking forward to Carousel for a very long time before it opened, because Justin Peck is a friend of mine, and I was super psyched to see what he would be doing with the show. It's amazing. And you guys have a cast album that just came out, is about to come out, right?
Just,
yeah.
When did it drop? A couple weeks ago now.
June 6th. Just up digitally, and then it's coming in hard copy Friday, I think. So we're excited.
On wax.
Yes.
On wax, if you will.
And this is, I would think this is an intense show to do a cast recording of. I mean, was it like a day long, everybody kind of drops dead at the end kind of thing? Or
it was pretty easy. No, it was it was coming off of a long week when we recorded
it. It was pretty shocking to
me.
I thought Renee would be like, let me tell you how it really was.
The whole show in one day, at some of the orchestra the night before. I have never experienced anything like that.
You have
it. Yes. Diva. Yeah,
that's no. Yes. Well,
no, because we take 5 days to do five days to do a recording.
I think that's very wise.
Yeah.
It's very wise to do that.
Yeah.
Says the man with all the arias in this one. I mean, truly. We were all like, we sort of finish the rest of us as the day we go on and we'd be like, have fun, Josh.
And I was like, see you later.
That's right. See you later. Last man standing.
Yeah.
But it was fun. Andy Einhorn brought cookies. And so I stole some of his cookies in between songs, and that's what really got me through.
Sure.
There you go.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I sort of want to know what your whole, like, hot liquid regimen is for the show and how you're like, I feel like you're speaking very softly right now.
Always. I like Throat Coat. It's really great, and I drink probably just gallons of it all the time. I probably drink a gallon of water outside the show daily, and I use these little Fontus lozenges during the show to just, you know, any little extra lubrication in your throat helps. So
I feel like these are all things we could, like, adopt in real life as well, like drinking a gallon of water in 90 degree heat.
These are just healthy habits.
Try to incorporate them.
Healthy habits with Joshua Henderson.
That's my only rebellion, is I should drink a lot of water, and I rebel against it. It's so bad.
Do you go for coffee instead?
I love coffee. I drink a lot of coffee.
There's
one of my
there.
Guilty pleasures. But they just said that coffee is not dehydrating. A study just came out. Yep, it just came out. I'll send it to you.
Is it all mental?
Please.
I'm so excited.
Who did the study?
Bunch of ENTs. Maybe self-serving. I don't know.
That's exciting.
I remember, like, one of the first days in rehearsal where I saw Renee drinking coffee during rehearsal. I thought, it's going to be okay. If Renee is drinking coffee, I think with cream, I was like, I like this lady. I knew I liked this lady. Yes. And now I have hope for my own future.
Yeah. I'm not terribly neurotic that way.
Oh, my God. Well, I think that, you know, part of what I love so much about this show is that in different ways, these roles feel very different for the three of you from what I'm used to seeing you. And I mean, Josh and Jesse, I know you mostly from sort of more contemporary, like, kind of maybe even pop-leaning kind of vocals kind of shows. And Renee, I know this is not your Broadway debut, but this feels like a major first big musical moment for you on Broadway. And I also think of you as a bit more glam than the typical Nettie. So I was curious, you know, why were you?
Yes. I guess.
No. I feel like you're working on stage. So I was curious, you know, what drew you to these roles, and were there different ways you wanted to approach them than how they're typically treated in, like, a traditional Carousel production?
For me, like you said, I've done a lot of, like, pop-leaning, I like that phrase, pop-leaning music on Broadway. And so I wanted to do something that was the opposite of anything I'd done before. And I'd never done this type of classical sound on Broadway to this extent. And that was what made it very exciting, to just take on another challenge and sort of redefine what myself vocally. That's always really exciting. It's just to just get a something that you've never done before and to just dive into that world fully. And it was really hard. And I don't feel like I feel like I'm still finding it now. I just popped into Renee's dressing room the other day, just asked her questions on a couple of vowels and some breathing techniques. And so it's constant.
He's found it. I'm sorry. He's amazing. Incredible.
It has been interesting, though, to kind of listen to each other. I think you and I and a couple other folks in the show would agree that we sort of went through the same process of, yeah, jumping into it and feeling like Andy Einhorn, our music director, was really stretching us. And there were some days where we'd look at each other and be like, are we doing it? Does it still sound like us? Do we still sound like people, like human beings singing, talking, speaking, thinking? And then, but yeah, it was that sort of push and pull, but that was half the fun of it. But sometimes it was really hard. But it's been fun to listen to each other, and I can hear how far we've all come, I think. I really can.
But that's why so many critics commented on how well sung the show is, and the fact that everybody's on the same page stylistically, to me, was very important. I asked for that a year ago when we first had meetings, because I'm always distracted when I go to a show and I hear people singing in different styles in the same show. You know, it's like Shakespeare. You go to a Shakespeare play and people are doing different styles of acting. You think, why didn't the director get on top of this and kind of bring people to pull it together? And boy, it's happened in this show. I've never heard anything this good. And you know, I've tried to also blend in and lighten up and, you know, take out as much vibrato as I can and not sing dark as much as I can. And, you know, we're all trying to be together.
It's funny you say that, because I don't remember a conversation that, you know, that,
I don't
like
think officially.
Andy Einhorn never was like, all right, now let's get all together on the same page. I mean, not that he would do something like that, but I think in listening to each other, you know, across the board, that was just something that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember those first rehearsals, and I was, personally, I was nowhere near where I am now. And I think all around the world, we all sounded very different. And so it's funny how that just happened over time in rehearsal and in previews.
Mm-hmm. And I think in singing with each other, and there's a couple moments in this version where we get to sing with each other in a couple more moments than is sort of originally conceived and things like that. When you have to sing with someone, you realize you really have to get on the same page. Stylistically, you have to match and you have to blend and And it's sort of what the piece calls for. I mean, it can be done many different ways, but I think there is a heightened nature to this music, to this subject matter. And I think, like what I was trying to say before, it was one of the challenges I think we faced in rehearsal. Josh and I would talk about, we'd work on something like the bench scene, and we just felt like they kept saying, you know, bigger with the singing. And we were like, well, where do we go with the speaking and the acting? How do we feel like we get the intimacy of the scene and also the grandiosity that's asked for in the music? But again, just sort of, I think with time, we found it. We found a version of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I hadn't thought about what kind of an adjustment that would be, because I think of the two of you as coming often from a very like naturalistic kind of almost, excuse me, like downplaying things kind of way, and you're used to playing to a huge opera house, so that's an interesting adjustment, I would think, both vocally and acting-wise for all three of you.
Yeah, and it's always, I think, an adjustment from a rehearsal room, a rehearsal process, to a theater, because you're going to act things differently in different spaces. When you're doing it in a rehearsal room and the people are getting your feedback from, or your artistic team, your director, who are 4 feet away from you, it only has to go 4 feet. Then you get in the theater and then it's got to go much farther than that. And
getting also costumes, I find, and wigs, and getting especially if it's a period piece.
Getting in the right underwear. What I mean? Seriously.
Huge.
You know, if you weren't getting in a corset. Getting in your clothes, getting in your shoes, knowing how you're standing. That was a whole other...
Yeah, just out of the lycra. The next step for me. Once you lose the stretch, it's a whole different feeling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Corsets,
yeah. I think what helped me was watching, like, when I wasn't in a particular scene during tech, getting out and watching your scenes. Mm-hmm. Because then you realize, oh, how big something is or how small it can be. Mm-hmm. And you figure out your – or I was – it helped my performance. I was like, oh, okay, I can afford to take my voice down that
down,
low.
Or I need to
– or get bigger. Yeah. But, you know, you trust our incredible director, Jack O'Brien, and Justin Peck as they're giving us the shapes and intentions. But you don't know until you can – you know, you see it mm-hmm. in the space.
Yeah, that helps.
The scope of it.
Well, I was curious because, I mean, I don't often talk about movement on this podcast, but it's such an intrinsic part of this production in particular. And as you're talking about, like, really feeling in your body and getting used to the way the show is sung, how central movement has been to this affected the vocal approach and kind of getting used to that?
I'll say huge. Because
you dance and you move in the show.
So. I was just asking Amar the other day how he breathes during, we have a little dance duet. And so I'm still trying to, you know, working it out months later, how he breathes throughout it and just trying to find more ease there. One of the things that helped me land into the sound that I'm doing right now is just standing when I'm supposed to stand. Because I always rebelled against the idea of like parking and barking or just hunkering down for a sound mm-hmm. because it's contrary to everything that I've done in musical theater. But there are times when to achieve a certain sound, you have to be much more still and your diaphragm has to be a certain way, your breathing has to be a certain way. So I've had to really sort of humble myself and be still at times on stage to achieve the sound. So the movement or lack thereof sometimes has been a big part of what's helped me get the sound that I'm getting.
Mm-hmm. Well, that you guys also dance like that and then can even speak is what I find
it's
a small miracle.
Yeah.
After a blow,
let alone sing.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But it's an adjustment for the dancers too, and I think one of the amazing things about this company, in rehearsal, you'd sit there. I think I saw most of our ensemble dance first, and I got to see a couple of workshop moments when they were working on the piece and finding the movement. And then you have a music rehearsal and you hear all of them sing, and it seems really unfair that they can do both of those things so well. The talent in this company is mind-blowing. But they went through a transition too, talking about the movement. You know, we're sort of laughing about our underwear and our corsets and whatnot, but that's true, and that's often part of a Broadway process is all the people that are involved, you know, the people that make your shoes for you, that get you your shoes early enough in rehearsal so those dancers can be working in the kind of shoes they're going to be working in, mm-hmm. so they know whether they can do that movement, or a rehearsal skirts with the guys so they know if they can do a certain kind of lift, or whether their bodice moves in a way that they can execute the choreography Justin has given them. You know, it's a process.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, and this seems like a good time to congratulate you on the many, many Tony nominations and Tony wins, which is exciting.
Thank you.
I was sitting there in the audience. I'm very excited for y'all. So, I mean, since we're speaking so much about the score, I feel like people mention Carousel, and if you're a theater fan, you just immediately think it's one of the great scores ever. And as I think one of you was calling the soliloquy an aria, basically, I feel like each of you has at least one, if not more, songs that really are like just virtuoso showpieces on their own. Tell me a little bit about why you think the score is so wonderful. And I'm curious if there are specific numbers you can talk about, you know, how you approach doing it night after night, not killing your voice, and, you know, bringing something new to these songs that are all pretty iconic at this point.
It's like, who starts? I was very intimidated. I was very intimidated by a lot of it for a long time. Mm. I'd known this score for a long time. Something like If I Loved You, the bench scene was always sort of, it was up there on a pedestal for me. And I think, so for me, that was almost the one I was afraid of. And it really took going through the process and getting inside of it. And I think that's sort of my nightly challenge, is not that, oh, here comes If I Loved You, we're going to sing If I Loved You, is to try to stay as present as possible. I mean, it's such a scene.
Yeah.
That whole song, the melody, once you get to the chorus, let's say, the iconic idea is so so melodic and you remember it, but the surrounding bits, it's just this dialogue that goes on between these two people, and to try to sing it to the extent that it deserves to be sung, but still live in it in such a way that it surprises you as each piece comes along. So I actually kind of love those nights where, to myself, where I think, oh my God, it's over. It happened. Then I really felt like I was really in it every step of the way, mm-hmm. and not getting ahead of Julie, the character I play, and where she's at. So it never feels like we're singing the song. Here it comes. It's Billy and Julie figuring it out.
It's interesting because I did the duet a lot. You know, it's kind of a go-to opera gala piece. And I didn't really appreciate it until I heard you do it, because I was taking a step back and seeing it in the context. I just thought, oh my God, this is the most beautiful piece. Listen to that melody, and look what's happening to these two characters, that they're flirting in this very kind of unconscious way. And I find it so moving now.
Context.
I wish I could go back 30 years and try it again as a student.
No,
you
but
know?
Context, you said that word, and I was like, I think that's it. I think so many songs from this piece, you know them because it's such a classic, and it's been around, and it's done over and over again for so many wonderful reasons, and you forget, and then you get to see it, and you get to see all these songs in context, and they just live in a completely new way, I think.
Well, You'll Never Walk Alone is definitely changed for me.
I remember you talked about
totally.
That because you've sung it a bunch.
Yeah, and it can be anything. It can be Only Hope. It can be, you know, really about bringing people together as sort of a community piece, and of course in this it's tragic. It's really about defining tragedy and trying to put some kind of face on it in the moment. You know, and she grasps at this, you know, at this, remembering this thing that's sitting on the wall back in the cottage. It's quite extraordinary, and it never fails to be moving to people and to us on stage. Yeah. And you're so consistent. Both of you are so consistent as actors too. It's really a privilege to share the stage with you.
I gotta say, that's one of my favorite moments, is because I'm actually
when you're dead.
I'm dead.
Spoiler
on stage.
Alert.
And I'm just literally laying down right beneath Jesse and Renee as she starts to sing that song. So I feel all the emotions of Jesse, of the loss, and then Renee trying to pick her back up with "You'll Never Walk Alone," and she's probably 2 yards away from me.
Am I drooling? No,
only once did you give a little splash.
Oh, hits my head first and then gets to him. Yeah. So it bounces off of me.
It's such a glorious moment. I just love being able to like chill out for a second with my eyes closed, 2 feet away from the orchestra and 2 yards away from hearing you sing that. I love it.
You're just enveloped in the "You'll Never Walk Alone-ness."
Well, I come off stage from holding her, and my dresser says, "Oh my gosh, your shawl is all wet from her tears." I mean,
or maybe drool. It could be drool.
A combination.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh my God. She can't get over that. She just can't get over it.
That's amazing. Well, I think that what really struck me about your rendition of it is, I think that it's a song that, depending on the production, it can sometimes feel like a showpiece that just kind of is apart from everything.
Sure.
It's like,
comes out of nowhere.
This magnificent delivery.
The anthem.
Yeah. And it felt very like intimate and human, the way you do it, almost sort of quiet in a way, which I wasn't expecting and which I thought was really nice.
Good.
Meanwhile, a less quiet song that you have to handle every night and that I know has taken on more personal significance for you recently, and talking about a number that you must just feel so much expectation in the audience. Or not. How are you dealing with that?
It's a mountain of a number. Sometimes when those first couple of chords hit, I can hear like, oh, you gotta do this all the way.
This is the song.
And, you know, I try not to hear any of that. And I have to not think about how long the journey is. It's a really great exercise in just staying in the moment. Mm-hmm. And of course, one of the things that helps is the fact that I recently did have a child 3 months ago, and he came during previews. And so really living in those questions of asking those first couple questions, I wonder what he'll think of me. Like, I still think those questions now when I look at him. So it's a really, it's taken on a really deep meaning for me right now. And thank God, because if I didn't have that personal connection, maybe I would think about how big of a piece it is and how it's one of the most like revered and feared songs in musical theater. But I love it. It feels like, you know, like going on you're going to run a marathon. You can't think about 23 or however many miles it is. You just think about, well, I've got to pace myself for this first quarter, and then, you know, I've got to get I just go through each of the steps and try not to think about how big it is, and then you definitely have to, like, save a little bit for that last third to get you through those last 30 seconds. But, yeah, this is one of the reasons I'm really excited to be in this piece, for a song like that that has such a journey of discovery and determination at the end to do something really great for his family, as Billy Bigelow has.
That's pretty amazing.
It's really the redeeming moment also for your character to see him care for the first time, to really be invested
and in. To see him question and to see him be vulnerable and to see that window into what his childhood must have been like. And it's just a fascinating piece. It's like a little play.
Well, and the journey that we went on really as a cast, and because of Jax trying to fold in the actual end of the show, which ends with a reprise of June Is Busting Out All Over, and then eventually just say, you know what, Joshua sings this so magnificently, he never phones it in, has so much energy and power, it's ridiculous to try and do anything after that. Mm. And that was the right choice.
Completely. Well, I mean, this is a complex show for all of the gorgeous music. Like, the plot has its difficult elements, and I feel like it's always like a little bit of a difficult show to explain the plot to someone else, for me at least, because it's like there's this guy that he hits the woman he loves, and then the rest of the show he's a ghost. It's a little strange.
Yeah, it's hard to do it in like one line.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Right.
I realize I sound crazy.
Like, well, this is Carnival, you see, and I talk about the horse a lot.
Yeah.
See, there's this horse.
Yes. First, you have to get someone to understand what a carousel barker is in the first place.
Right.
But this show feels, there's something that feels sort of this moment and like a little modern to it. So I was just curious, like,
heck yeah,
what the if there were conversations in terms of like how the director talked to you about sort of the approach and just like how you're interpreting those difficult things for like the moment we're in now.
I feel like the thing I just keep thinking of is just how open Jack was in the process. So much so that he would say, I might not know the answer to this, or you might not know the answer, let's talk about it. And in terms of what the world is going through and, you know, the darkness our world is facing on a day-to-day basis, I think and hope and pray that's one of the reasons this piece is hitting people. It's because we don't pretend like we don't face darkness anymore. We can't. We know we have to look at it, and we know we have to work really hard to choose love. And I think that's one of the themes that this play explores. And Jack, our director, he's like, I want you to ask me questions, and if you feel uncomfortable about something, I want us to talk about it. And we were really, really blessed with the group we have, that everybody's hearts were just in the right place from the beginning. So, you know, whenever you step into a new artistic endeavor, my prayer is always like, oh man, I hope this is a good group. You know what I mean? I hope everybody wants to go play in this sandbox, because, and when it's something like this, I think where the subject matter is, I mean, it's life. It's the nitty gritty, the good, bad, the ugly of life. You want to be in a room with people who are good, open souls that are willing and brave enough to ask those kinds of questions and delve into that kind of stuff. And that's the group we had and have.
Well, and I keep thinking how sad I am that the darker aspects of the story are still so relevant. In fact, incredibly relevant. I mean, the despair that Billy Bigelow, the character, feels because he's lost his job and he's thrown into this new situation at a time when he feels very vulnerable, et cetera, that cause him to lash out, cause him in the end really to give up on life. This is happening all over our country right now, all over the world, but especially to have it be happening here in the U.S. is, in my lifetime, I've never seen anything like this, and that suicide rates are raising at the degree they are, especially in young people, I find really sad. And I do think that people are reacting emotionally to the piece because it's so relevant. It's 75 years later.
I have to say that actually stood out to me in a way that it hasn't in Carousel before, just feeling the sort of hopelessness of the place that Billy is in, and feeling more that he's driven to this act rather than that it's just something intrinsic to the way he is.
Mm. Exactly.
I hope so. I mean, I think the biggest, you're talking about like hope, you know, and the fact that we need it so much in dark times. A song like that gets reprised at the end, You'll Never Walk Alone, that's like the biggest takeaway of this for me, and I'm hoping for the audience, is that no matter the time that we're in, there's always going to be, you know, hopefully we can cling to love, but there's always going to be dark moments. Yep. And all we want to know is that we're not going through it alone. All we want to know is that there's someone else who can say, I know what you're going through, you know, either I've been there or I understand where you are. Mm-hmm. Not that I can fix it.
No, but I can see it.
But I can see it.
And I can
say, hey, I see you in this. I'm here with you in this. I think that's one of the biggest reasons I'm so excited to be involved with this piece, is for that message alone, that you'll never walk alone.
Yeah.
I believe that.
Well, I have to say that this plays into, I felt that this year was just the first really exciting year for revivals that I remember in sort of recent history on Broadway. Like, you know, you and My Fair Lady and Once on This Island are just like, I can't choose a favorite among the three of you. I mean, you're all great. And it just makes me think of the fact that revival now seems to mean really reviving a show and not just doing a like cast in plaster perfect rendition of it the way it used to be. And I just wondered if you all have feelings on that, if you feel like there's sort of a movement forward with, you know, revisiting these classic shows in a way that feels sort of newly relevant to where we are now.
I think so. I feel like probably the artists inside of the pieces and the audiences that come to see them, we're just not satisfied with dusting off a relic anymore.
No.
We just, you look at some of the amazing entertainment that's out there, whether it's on a stage or hanging on a wall or, you know, what's happening on Netflix or Amazon, or there's all kinds of different things, but I think there's just this depth of reality and a need and a want for that. And I mean that in a good way, not like a reality show. I guess not that there's anything wrong with a reality show, but I just think there's this yearning to get to something that matters. It's like what you were saying. People want to look to entertainment and to art to feel less alone. I think at the end of the day, yes, it's also to be entertained, but I think you can't be entertained until you feel like like you can be there, you can be present to experience something.
And permission to feel, too, I think, is something we don't get very much right now. A lot of television, I'm finding, is super smart, incredibly well-produced, and sometimes incredibly violent. But if you're feeling something, it's revulsion. It's sometimes it's, you know, horror. It's this show you come to and you care about the characters in it. But of course, I'm coming from opera, so we've been reviving pieces for about 150 years. That's all we do for the most part. Fortunately, now we're in a place where there's a lot of new work, and I celebrate that.
But again, it's always been a depth of feeling.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the great pieces of opera and the it's to go there and feel. And when something like that comes together, when a beautiful piece of musical theater comes together in all the way, right ways, and the music is there and the spectacle is there and the acting is there and the stagecraft is there, I just think there's nothing like it. It just sort of takes you away.
And dance in this one, too. So every element is on the highest possible level.
Yeah, it's transporting. It's transporting.
I feel like when you have a revival, like you said, it's not just enough to dust it off anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's about having a focus. And I think Jack's focus for this, which was really the exploring the spirituality of this piece and really thinking about what redemption means right now. Those are heavy things to deal with, and they force us to look at ourselves individually and as a society and how we grapple with these heavy issues.
Mm-hmm.
That helps us feel so much. And I'll say I've never seen a carousel. I've seen the movie. I haven't seen any other production, but knowing that that was the focus coming into this, that it wasn't just let's do this for the amazing songs and choreography that is here, that's what you wanna. That's what I wanna always be involved with. I've never done a. That's not true. I did one other revival before, but that's what really excited me about doing this. With aside from the incredible cast that I'm working with now, so
yeah, the message that's there.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of breathing new life into these things, Josh is doing that backstage as well with.
He's breathing. He is.
He's breathing. No, with the Bigelow Flows, and you've done this before with the Ham Jams in Hamilton, and even I was a fan of like the slow jams you were doing with Brandon Victor Dixon backstage with Shuffle Along.
Oh wow! Throwback.
Yes,
the
Jodeci moments I enjoyed.
Come on, all right.
Yes. No.
I'm
your Instagram follower. and yeah, so I wanted to know like kind of what's inspired you to do this, like what kind of other need this is satisfying you artistically and what it's like to participate in them.
Well, I grew up listening to all types of music. I love jazz, R&B, folk. And so, you know, when you're doing a musical 8 times a week, you're in that world musically and sonically, and you want to just, I feel like I have to exercise other musical arms and legs. So Ham Jams or Bigelow Flows has helped me to do that. And so it's just thinking about it in terms of just a different style, whether it be, you know, Take Six is one of my favorite groups. It's a lot of harmonies.
Oh, neat.
You like Take Six?
Yeah, they're great, yeah.
And just having people who are diverse and can take chances. Like Renee comes from the opera world, but like she's singing this little jazzy, blow high, blow low. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I enjoyed that
killing
very much.
You know, and Jessie can literally sing anything. I mean, she's
a sweet
vocal chameleon. And so when you have people that are just so game, the possibilities are endless. So we're just getting started with those Bigelow Flows.
Hey. Actually, you know, I forgot to mention, I have a Broadway album coming out September 7th.
Yes.
So be generous.
Hey.
Be generous. I did my best, you know, everything from Dear Evan Hansen to a lot of R&H, of course.
Nice.
But it was really fun. It was sort of a when in Rome, do as.
Yeah.
It was kind of a, well, let's explore this, you know, vocally.
No, I wanted to mention that. I got a notice about that the other day, and I was very excited about the Dear Evan Hansen song in particular.
Oh,
I'm excited, too.
I could never
sing it
without crying.
It makes me cry every single time.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you say which song it is or no?
Yeah, it's That's So Big, So Small, the mother song.
Oh, yes. Oh. I get like a lump in my throat just thinking about it. That's the moment when I fall apart.
Yeah.
When I've seen the show.
It's so relevant. It's incredibly relevant and true.
Well, you should come back to the podcast when the Broadway album comes out.
Thank you.
We can talk all about it.
Thank you.
Well, thank you all for coming. It's great to chat with you.
Nice to have you too. And can I just say that your writing is just really beautiful. She's got this.
It is.
My little notes that I write and then like don't really look.
Is it cursive?
Very neat.
It's just, it's like some sort of hybrid.
It's a hybrid, but it's
I feel like I was probably one of the last people where in school you did learn cursive.
Yes, we sure did.
That is lovely.
Mrs. Hebel was like, you better watch that dotted line in the middle.
She's got lines, though, you
that
know.
Has
I don't
to
know.
Go halfway up.
The dotted line in the middle is.
Remember?
Yeah.
Membership.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on that wonderful note.
Yes.
Yay. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank
sure.
you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you.
Carousel is playing now at the Imperial Theater, and the new Broadway cast recording is available on the digital platform of your choice and is out physically today, July 13th. If you're a fan of the Billboard on Broadway podcast, as usual, please give us stars and nice reviews on iTunes. If you'd like to follow me and the happenings of the podcast on Twitter, I'm at Rebecca Milzoff, on Instagram at YaDownWithRMM. And you can always use the hashtag Billboard on Broadway to talk about the podcast. The summer is not the most crazy active time for musical theater, but there are some exciting shows opening in the coming weeks, so the podcast will be back soon.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.